Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for Autumn Semester 2022. Today, free cash flow. A few minor notes. As I told you, there's a there was a quiz that did not get sent out the first week of class, and I'll send that out this weekend. You'll have the finish it up. It's basically a syllabus quiz. Make sure you know everything about the syllabus, the expectations, and the prohibitions in the classroom, and just get it done. It'll be due on Sunday night, just 10 minutes. And that should give you some nice extra, nice easy 100% on a quiz. Other than that, trying to think, I'll probably have a quiz sometime next week. I won't announce it. It will be unannounced. It won't be in the calendar either, on Monday or Wednesday. But we'll get to that when we get to that. For now, it's time to look at the numbers on Wall Street for the day, and it's complicated, very complicated kind of day here. Good day or bad day, sir?
Good day.
Kind of. It was all over the place. Almost a kangaroo kind of day. It was bouncing up and down and up and down. But at the end, it finally finished on the upside. The problem is right now that the market is sort of drifting. You know, the bad news that drove the market into a heavy loss early in the week it's past now, and the markets are looking for the next news, and there really isn't anything right now that's getting the market too excited. Just a little good news here, a little bad news there. So the bulls and bears are just kind of pushing back and forth against each other, looking for some running room, and it's just not there. The trading is thin right now on the markets. But as you can see, and I told the previous class that I was suspecting the market hadn't closed then, and that the end on a day like this can be either a surge way down or start a surge up. In this case, it was a good surge on the upside, which is good for me because I took a bull position early this morning. And there are a couple of times I was down, and joyfully at the end here, I'm back up again. But kind of hard to say. The NASDAQ really started to show some strength. You can see that typical pattern. Dow up a little bit, big lumbering companies. Then the S&P 500, more big companies, but not quite as big. They're up more. And then the NASDAQ, it was just pulling hard upward. Again, that's something that you see quite frequently in these numbers, is that the highest risk, NASDAQ, highest gain or loss. The lowest risk, the Dow, the lowest gain or loss. Just the way it always, not always, but very frequently that's what it goes on. Now oil, it's got what we call a trading range going on. It's kind of rattling between 82 and 90, and anywhere in there, your gas isn't that bad. It's like 279, 269 a gallon, 289 maybe. So the major number that was driving the big inflation rates, that has calmed down to a pussycat now. That is making the markets optimistic that the Fed isn't going to do anything dramatic to slow down the economy much more. So as long as oil is behaving itself, and other prices will start to calm down over the next few months, we should go into the close of the year in a pretty darn good shape. But there are other things that could intervene. Now gold, another good sign is gold is just dropped hard. Gold is the apocalyptic thing. Oh, if there's gold, if the world is going to hell, then the gold bugs are buying gold right and left. As you can see, they're not. That means that, and no other investors are jumping in to buy gold to protect against disasters. good news when you see gold easing up. And as you can see, silver is not, the speculators don't attack silver. That's more, like I've said, just normal supply and demand dynamics. So that further emphasizes that drop in gold really is the speculators and gold getting off the field. So that's kind of good news too. Now bonds. Bonds finished a tiny, tiny bit down, which means that the price of bonds was up a tiny bit, meaning that there was some buying of bonds. Nothing really significant at all. Remember I told you that about a 0.33, 0.25%, that's where you're, if it's not above that, then it's pretty much a flat day. And that's what it was with the bond market. It was pretty much a flat day. Buying and selling were pretty much on par. On par. So in other words, where we are looking is equities were starting to surge there at the end. So good news. Will that keep going? Well, I sure hope so, because I've got a bull position that I can't get out of until tomorrow morning. So I'm hoping that the overnight and the pre are going to be strong upward movements. Tokyo. Tokyo started out down, and it never did really find happiness all day in Tokyo. The sun went down in Tokyo, and then it opened in London, and the negative sentiment spilled there. And London went down. And then by the end, though, whatever the bad news was, it was over. And no other news made it so that the market just bounced around. Come over here, and the pessimism had gone away. There was generally, all through the day, there was more bullish sentiment than bearish. You can see that profit taking that happened right in there. The bears came through, but by the end, they couldn't stop the bulls. At the end, the sentiment was, we're looking at a good day tomorrow unless something bad happens. So the bulls were taking long positions, just like I did. So there, yeah, good news for all of us. A little bit longer on this is where we go from here with these. We are coming into the major buying season of the year. Of course, obviously, that's Christmas. And, excuse me, let me shut this thing up. We're coming into the big buying season. As much as 75% to 80% of all revenues for retail in the United States come in the three-month period, October, November, December. That's the buying time. And if we go into that with people in a better mood, with a mood to buy stuff, we could have a hella end of the year coming up. And so that's good news too, because that takes us into next year on a positive note, more jobs, more production, and everyone is in a better mood. And so that has a political implications too, of course. And I won't go into those here in this class right now, but the bulls are actually have a good argument for saying we're coming into a bull market. The bears are going to disagree, and that doesn't mean that we might not get slaughtered here pretty soon. Let me take you through a couple of stocks here just to start the ball rolling today. Let me do something I haven't done. Lockheed Martin. Lockheed is a defense company. In other words, it's a war company. And you notice that Lockheed was up strongly today. I mean, it was up a lot. What does that mean? It means that the market sees this as very much a prospective company for revenue gains over the next year to 2 years. And that, why would that be? Because these are companies that function because of wars and preparations for wars. The world is on edge. We have a definite win going on with Ukraine right now, and so that's a good one. But we also have the prospect of a really dark horizon right over the edge with China and Taiwan. It's good for defense stocks. And there's always a good war going on somewhere. Sometimes it's a great war. So anyway, you'll see that in a case like this, Lockheed Martin is actually a beta 0.66. That's a very safe company. And its PE ratio is fairly reasonable too. So there's good upside potential. Now I want to show you something here. Many of these financial services and web pages give forecasts of prices of stock in a year. Now, how seriously do you take that? Well, when you're talking about a company like Yahoo, I'm not sure you would want to take them too seriously as far as their predictions go. But with that aside, setting that aside, let me take you here on a little bit of a journey. I'm going to show you, if Yahoo Finance forecast is correct, this is saying that 1 year from today, at the end of exactly 1 year, the stock will be $459.32 a share. Now, if you bought it today, you would pay about $416.63 a share. You take the ending value divided by the beginning value, and you subtract one, and that would be your holding period return, which is exactly a year here. So Yahoo Finance is saying that your capital gain for a one-year hold will be 10.25%. Now, however, Lockheed Martin pays a dividend. It pays on, if you bought a stock, the stock for $460.63, you would get an $11.20 dividend. So that would add to your capital gain. And so your total return forecast by Yahoo for a one-year hold on Lockheed Martin would be 12.99%. That's not shabby. That's, especially for a low beta stock, that's really decent. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are other ones that are better, but at the same time, this is, in other words, your total gain is going to be your capital gain, how much the stock appreciates, plus the dividend you get. And so put together, that is your total return. Now let me take you over here and show you a company like Tesla. Tesla is risky as hell. 2.19 beta. That's pro level. No one who is a normal investor, unless you're a fan of crack cocaine, you don't do that. That's insane risk. And what are you going to get out of it? Well, let's look at Yahoo Finance. Yahoo says that if you bought Tesla right now for in 1 year, you would be able to sell it at $302.68. If you bought it right now for $302.61, end over beginning, minus one, my ass, I did that wrong. $302.68 divided by $302.61 minus one. Is that all? Let me do that again. 302.68 divided by 302.61 minus one Let me times that by 100 so I can actually see a number here. That's a lousy return. That's lousy. That's horrible. And also, even worse, there's no dividend. So your entire gain is going to be with that stock price going up. And right now, the markets are saying that Elon Musk, he of the cloven foot, is not going to be doing anything with this company. Now, in the last class, I did a financial analysis of Tesla. And the whole point of this lecture is finding free cash flow. This is the holy grail in finance. How much cash did they generate, or how much cash were they out for the year? And Tesla was negative, ridiculous cash. And so that means that something was funneling money in, because free cash flow isn't a mythical number. It's not an accounting number. That's money that has, that is there or is absent. And if it's absent, it has to be brought in from somewhere to pay the bills. And when you have a company where I calculated, well, for the example for the students, I calculated that one at negative $4 billion. For God's sake. I mean, that's not, well, we'll do better next. No, you have to find that $4 billion. That's money that had to be paid. Where did that money come from? Well, it's clear that the fund managers who put their necks out so far to get Tesla up to those insane price levels, they can't get out. They have to keep this thing going, because if Tesla fails, you will see a cascade effect on big houses and trust funds on Wall Street. It would be a catastrophe. So that money is being funneled in the back door. I'll tell you another story about negative free cash flows from 15 years ago that no one knew was, well, no one knew why. It was known that the free cash flows were insanely negative. It was because of that, it was clear that the U.S. economy was going to collapse. We didn't know was that they had a sugar daddy that was keeping them all going. So when analysts like me in 2007, late 2007, were saying the end of the world is coming, we looked like idiots, because we had no idea that there was something backing those companies, those giant banks. We had no idea. And the extent to which they were turned out to be staggering. That's down the road. For us, this story today is about Target. I did the financials, and I will post these in your resources tab. Once I finish all the analysis in the spreadsheets, I'll have it up. I'll put it up on the web tonight. I'm looking for. I had a note card, and I don't think I have it anymore. But oh well, one way or the other. Okay. I had a note written somewhere, something I wanted to mention about Target. I can't remember what it was. Oh, I know what, there. Okay. Now, Target is kind of like considered the golden child of retail. It's been criticized heavily for some of what it has done. And it was in 2014, it's been that far long ago. Okay, in 2014, Target went on a spending spree with its stores. It upgraded almost all of them. I don't know if you remember if you went to Target back in that time, but the Targets, the way they look now, look a lot different from what they did then. For one thing, they've got a grocery section in all of the Targets. It's not a fancy, it's not a huge one. It's just basics. Meats, milks, vegetables, and some canned goods and salted snacks and all that. They didn't go overboard with this, but what they were doing was they said, look, we don't want to go the way of all of these old retailers like Sears, Lazarus, JCPenney, where they never spent the money to upgrade their stores. And they still looked at the end of their days like they did in their heyday. And I swear, even the clothes were the same ones my grandmother bought in there 80 years ago. And Sears was the same way. They never modernized. And Target, it was criticized heavily. Don't get me wrong. It was criticized heavily for spending so much money to upgrade all the stores. But at the same time, they did what was right. They did those capital expenditures, and they modernized so that they could move into the 21st century, so that they were still as attractive to you at your age as they would be to the youths that were here in 2000, in the year 2000, now that they're 40 years old. See, some companies think they can ride a demographic wave. We'll always be for this one cohort group. Target says, no, we're going to catch each wave as it comes through. And if they still want to come here after they get too old or older, well, that's fine. But they still wanted to stay with the young people. Turns out it was just brilliant. Now, let me look here. Target. Notice something interesting. Target slid in the market, but in the aftermarket, they're recovering. That's kind of cool, but one way or the other. Now, as you can see, Target has a very calm beta. It's almost exactly the market, almost exactly, 1.02. So whither goes the market, Target goes in the same way. And the P/E ratio is actually kind of attractive. It looks price to earnings. If 30 is like a marker, it looks like Target has some attractive upside price movement. Now, also look at this one. Look at this one. The payout ratio. Target made for each of its shares, for the shareholders, after all the bills were taken care of, it made $8.83 for each share. It gave back $4.32 of that to the shareholders in dividends. So we could say the plowback ratio here is $4.32 divided by $8.83. No. So Target gives back, it gives back its dividend ratio is almost 50%. It gives back to the shareholders. Here, you can do this. And then it gives back about 49%, and it keeps 51% to plow back into the company to grow the company's stock. So that in itself indicates that it's a relatively safer stock. Now, let's look at what, now again, I caution you. When you look at things like Yahoo Finance and all these predictive services, take it for what it's worth. If you got the information free, well, guess what it's worth. But if we were to just, taking that aside though, let me see here. Now, they are forecasting that in 1 year, you'll have $191.07 divided by investing today, 1 year previous, $165.38 minus one. So that would be a capital gain of 15.5%. That's damn good. I mean, you're not going to get that in any savings account. Plus, though, they pay a dividend. A dividend, 2.6. Let me explain. $4.32 divided by $165.38 is the dividend yield. Essentially, you think of this like, okay, I'm going to put $165.38 into an account. I have a good reason to believe that the company will yield a check to me of $4.32. Never mind what the stock price is worth. I kind of know that I'm going to at least get $4.32 out of my $165.38. That's called the dividend yield. So if I add that, 0.0260, that's a hell of a nice, I mean, you're getting 15.5% on the stock price appreciation. You're getting 2.6% on your investment in a dividend check. So your total return, a one-year holding period, an annual return, since it is 1 year, it gets a little more complicated if you do it for something other than a year, but here we're fine. You're going to get, you can expect something like an 18.13% return, total return. I mean, that's darn good for a beta of one. Hell, if I could put a bunch of stocks like that in, I'd be in business. That's some pretty nice, that's nice. And I'm going to show you something just in a couple of weeks here. If you can put money into these stocks that are stable, that have long-term growth, you don't sell them, you don't buy something stupid, you just hold over a period of a long period of time, you will come out ahead fabulously. You'll see in one example that in one portfolio, if you had put in $25,000 in 1975 and just left it there, through the big times and through the black swans, if you had just left it there, this year you'd have about $8.5 million. That's the power of buy and hold. Most people panic. They see a stock price go down, they sell. Well, usually they sell after the price has already lost most of its oomph. And then when do they buy? Well, once the stock price goes up, then they buy again after the price has gone up. And that's how they lose. They never make much money because they didn't control themselves. They didn't buy and hold. Oh, anyway, let me stop beefing about that. Here we go, though. Here is Target for the day. And here are the financial statements that I was working on previously. And again, I'm going to, once I finish what I'm doing today, I will upload these to the ReggieNet in your resources tab. It'll just say Target on it. And you can go through, see what I did, and just get the feel for how these numbers interlock with each other. As I have said on a number of occasions, in other classes, I don't know how much I've emphasized it here. Doing this kind of analysis, and it's not just for a finance person, it's for anyone in business. Before you attack numbers, before you do math, before you whip out your calculator, your pencil and pen, and your Excel sheet, look at the numbers. Just look at them. This was the whole thing about in combat, in situations. You don't charge in, you recon. You look at the lay of the terrain. You look inside of the obvious features and see if there's anything that's small that, or maybe not immediately noticeable. Look at the numbers and get comfortable with them before you start attacking them. As I used to get in trouble for this when I taught math, I said, arithmetic is the last resort of a scoundrel. Before you do arithmetic, look at the numbers, see what they're saying. I'm looking up here at Target. I see total revenue and I see growth. You see it? You see the growth? I am a little bit bothered that their growth was not as strong year over year this last year as it was before. But then I think, that was the COVID lockdown. It probably, this last year had some of the deleterious effects of that lockdown and people not buying as much. Most importantly, a lot of universities were locked down, and Target gets a lot of its revenue from students who go there to buy stuff for their apartments and their dorm rooms. Okay? So I can think about that. just start thinking about the logic, what's going on, what the numbers are telling us before you go too far. Cost of sales seems to be moving at a fairly fairly steady pace. That's good news. Okay, now I'm going to go down here and look around, just prowl around a little bit. I can see that their operating income was growing at a fairly steady, nice rate. Good stuff, good stuff. But now I'm going to go over here. I want to look at a couple of things. Let me look at the balance sheet here for just a minute. Oops, statement of cash flows, balance sheet. I see, interestingly, you see that their liquidity, they brought down their liquidity, their cash on hand, but they brought up their inventory. That's an interesting thing. What does that exactly mean? Well, you see a company that has too much cash is wasting money because that cash is just sitting there not earning anything. But if you have too little cash, then you could come into a liquidity bottleneck paying bills. We'll look at the current ratios again, just to see those liquidity ratios, just to check that out. But I will see, land and buildings and equipment, those two categories. And if you don't see this, let me try this with you, ma'am. Those numbers, you see how their land went from $6,141,000 to $6,164,000, and their buildings went from $3.155 billion to $31.55 billion to $32.985 billion. What could you tell me about that? And it's okay if you say, I got nothing. Okay, good. Good choice. Remember how I told you they went on an aggressive improvement and building spree about 5-6 years ago, something like that? This is the after effect. They don't need to do this kind of stuff. Do you see how those numbers didn't grow very much at all? They did it. They've already accomplished it. They don't have to keep doing this. And that's good because now they're in a position where they don't have to burn cash buying land and buying and building stores. So that is an after effect of something that they had done previously, so that now, you know, in the morning, I get in front of the mirror, I put on my makeup, I put on my cologne, and I comb my hair, and I say, yeah. So I don't have to do it before class, because it didn't work the first time, why is it going to work the second time? No, but you see, they've already gone through that phase of improvement. And probably they'll do another one, maybe in 10 years. But you can see that they have a deliberate cycle of capital improvements. That's good news. Now, I'm going to go down here and look really quick. Look at their debt. They have taken on some more debt recently, long-term debt. They've borrowed some money. Now, the question would be, why did they borrow that money? The one thing is that they did have some, they did acquire some land and some more facilities. It looks like that's almost a match. So they probably used debt to do whatever capital improvements they did. That's my best guess with that. Here's an interesting thing. Their common stock at par went down. How would common stock go down? You can't just say, go away. You know, yeah? Bingo. They bought back some of their shares. That's almost unquestionably what happened here. So they can do that for several reasons. One, there's a dark reason. Some companies are buying back massive numbers of the shares of their own stock. And they're making massive profits, and they're using those to buy back their own stock. That's scary because it looks like some of these big, huge companies are trying to go private. So they're no longer held to account by the SEC and by some other government laws. So that's a bad thing. Here, this might be, a lot of times the company will buy back some of its stock just to boost the stock price, just to give a little juice to the stock price so that the shareholders get sort of so it's sort of like a hidden dividend in a way. Company comes in, demand for the stock goes up, and then that causes the price to go up. That might be what's going on here. Now, statement of cash flows. This is where we come in. Okay. Now, the one that we are aiming the most to have a look at here is their investing activities. This is how much money they spent on new property, plant, and equipment last year. Okay? Now, there are two schools of thought. We're going to need this capital expenditures number. Some say just use this one, and others say also include the other ones in the investing activity so that you get this one. Use this number, not this one. Okay? I think the book, I'm pretty sure, they say just grab this number. Realistically, probably you should use this one instead. A caution, this number is going to be a negative. When we use it in the equation for free cash flow, we say minus capital expenditures. So if you pull this one directly, you'd be minusing a minus, and you don't want to do that. So one of the things that I'll do is I'll show you how to just take the absolute value of this number in the final equation. And don't worry, the equation isn't hard. But anyway, so I can see that they used $3.154 billion of cash. That would, just about explain that. You can see that how these parts are interlocking. And you don't need to be a genius at this, but this is sort of the basis of how we begin to say, what's the story these numbers are telling us? Now, let me get away from that before I scare you too much with numbers here, saying don't worry about the numbers and then doing the numbers. And I'm going to go through a typical financial statement. Now, the accountants are going to say, first you take revenue, and then you're going to subtract your cost of goods sold, and that will give you your gross income. Now, as I had told you before, a lot of companies aren't reporting this line anymore. Target does. So one way or the other. And then, in a sort of a broad stroke, we have the SG&A, the selling, general, and administrative expenses. Wages, salaries, light bills, marketing, meals and entertainment, mailings, advertising, whatever. Okay. So that's sort of a generic category. We can break that down later, and we will, just to see how they are managing things like their employment levels and all that. But then the accountants subtract out a number that does not exist. It isn't there. It's the depreciation expense. And I keep going back to my own example because it still galls me to this day. I spent $4,500 on an extraordinarily expensive portrait lens for my photography work. And I can't take away $4,500. I've got to chop that into five pieces. And I capitalized the $4,500 and then depreciated over a five-year schedule. So on any given year, it's only $900. There was no $900 in what really happened. There was no $900 anywhere in what happened. I paid $4,500. It just went like that, out the door. Gone forever, bye. Okay, well, that certainly tells us the depreciation expense isn't a real thing. Well, why are we going to leave it there? We will leave it there because it does reduce the taxable income. We'll add it back after it's done that little trick. But for now, just recognize that we are going to have to get rid of it for our purposes. So then when you finished all that, you get your operating income, otherwise known as EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, Op Inc., operating. You'll hear me even just shorten it to operating. What was the operating? Okay. That's kind of where we stop, the accountants. But we're going to let the accountants keep going because we don't want to hurt their feelings. Interest expense. We're going to subtract that. What you paid on your long-term debts. Now, the one thing is that we're going to say as finance people, we don't care. We're not going to include that. We're going to have to get rid of that. And you guys, why would you get rid of it? You have to pay your interest, or you said the bondholders will shut you down. True enough. But it is not an operating cost. I paid my coupon, 8% of $50 million. Boy, oh boy, I'll bet that'll increase productivity this month. No, it won't. It won't do a damn thing for your productivity. It's not operating. It is just one of those things sitting there looking at you. At the end, when we get to free cash flow, that's when we will know if we have the money to pay our interest expense, pay dividends, and all of that. We need to drive it to the bottom line and then see what's left after the smoke clears. So we're going to get rid of that. We're not going to pay attention to that. But then this next line. This one is after you subtract out your earnings, your interest expense, you get your earnings before taxes, what we call pre-tax. And then, now here's where things get a little complicated. Tax minus your taxes, and that brings you down to your net income. Well, we include the taxes, but not the way that's usually done. Okay, tax story. And I've already told you this part of it. In 2017, the top marginal tax bracket on corporations was brought down from 39% to 21%. The largest tax reduction of corporate tax reduction in US history. It was a staggering, almost half the rate now that it was before then. Most companies, the tax rate, whatever it is, 39%, 21%, 30%, most companies don't pay that. They have all kinds of ways they can get around taxes. In some shocking examples, not only do some of the largest companies in the world not pay any tax, the government gives them money back. And you say, how could that happen? First of all, as far as controlling your taxes goes, classic way of doing it, you, madam, are the CEO of Megacorp USA. So what do? You say, okay, you create a corporation somewhere else in the world where there aren't any taxes or there are very low taxes. So what happens with that is that I buy the wholesale parts. I then sell them to you at an inflated price. I bought them for $2,000. I sell them to you for $4,500. You charge $5,000 for the good. You make a small profit, gross of $500. Okay? But then, I'm part of your company. I made all the money at a low tax rate in a low tax rate country, and it looks like you made hardly anything in this country. That's one of the best ways. Another way that it's done is with tax loss carryforwards and carrybacks. If I look for a company, it has lost money for years. So that means it has negative taxes. So what I do as a large, profitable corporation is I buy that company, and that brings its negative taxes back to life, and then I use those against my positive taxes to lower my tax bill. You can do it for the future for a couple of years, or you can carry them back and say, oh, we've bought this company. It had losses since 2012. So now we're going to recalculate our taxes for all those years. So government, please send us checks now because we actually have negative taxes. So they can bring them back to life forward, or they can bring them back to life backward. And so these companies that are making insane profits on paper, it looks like they owe very little tax. Okay, so know that, is that most companies don't pay 21% or 39% or whatever it is. Now, I'm going to talk a little more about taxes. How do we account for that as finance people? Well, the easy way, which is what the book does, is say just take pre-tax times 1 minus 0.21, and that will be your net income. In other words, just calculate 21% of your pre-tax. That's how the book does it. That's how a lot of finance books do it. The more realistic way to do it is just to take the number that they gave us. What did Target pay for its taxes? Yeah, what did they pay? Really, where the hell, the heck, there it is. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, they paid that much right there, $1.961 billion. So you can take either $8.907 million times 0.21 to get the taxes, or you can take the number that they actually say they paid. I mean, it's easier just to take 0.21. Let me show you something here. I'm just kind of curious myself. Equals how much they paid in taxes divided by their pre-tax. Holy cow! They actually paid their fair share. I did it in the last class for Tesla. Theirs was 0.11. So they were using all these energy tax credits and lots of other chicanery. I mean, that's a little weird, though. They're paying above the 21%. Oh, I wonder if they're including, like, state taxes and things like that in there. Okay, maybe that's it. But one way or the other, see, I could also just do equals 21% of pre-tax. Let's try that one more time. Equals 21% times pre-tax. That would have been a little lower. But like I said, that's kind of the way it's usually done, is just take 0.21 instead of the actual number. But anyway, one way or the other, let me get down to this now. Here's what we do in finance. As I said, the accounting financial statements are information products that are produced for different consumer constituencies. And so in our case, the first thing we're going to do is stop here at operating income. We stop right there. Then, to get the post-tax, we do 1 minus the T, or the operating income minus 21% of the operating income. Now, you can also, like I said, actually just do operating income minus what they said their taxes were. You could do it either way. Like I said, the book, I'm pretty sure every example, they say just take 1 minus 0.21. Either way, the numbers shouldn't be too different. Well, yeah, they are, because Tesla is a good example of a company that just doesn't pay its fair share. Well, I shouldn't say that, but it gives you an idea. Let me, very quickly, while I've got the moment at hand, I want to show you something real quick here. I'm going really quickly. GOOG, just to show you something real quick. They're 10K, right there. Interactive Data. Let me take their income statement. There is what their pre-tax was. $90 billion. On $90 billion, they paid $14 billion, $15 billion. around there. That gives you an idea. 14 divided by 90 is definitely a lot lower than 21%. Gives you an idea. Why do we have these massive budget deficits that are getting worse and worse with the tax rate cut nearly in half and many of the largest corporations of the earth not even paying that? There's your budget deficits skyrocketing. That's the cause. And you can do all the mumbo jumbo you want. What if? Who farted? Yes, but it boils down to that, period. Anyway, just a little cautionary tale there. Now let me take you on your journey here. Okay, this thing right here, this animal right here, is called NOPAT, the net operating profit after taxes. This is our first signpost on the way to finding free cash flow, is NOPAT. It doesn't take into account interest expense. It just calculates what you paid in tax off your operating income. Now, we drive down to get free cash flow. The first one that we'll need to do is add back that depreciation expense. That did not happen. Now, many companies, Target is not one of them, but many companies do not report the depreciation expense separately. But Target, interestingly enough, does. I don't know when it got popular not to report it as a separate line, but it's got to have been 10 years ago because I just got blindsided when I was just doing the lecture that I had been doing for decades, and I couldn't find the depreciation expense there. Now, if it isn't there, it will be over here in the statement of cash flows. There is actually a line for the statement of cash flows, right there. So you might have to pick it off there if it's not in the straight line of the income statement. One way or the other, we've got it right there. Okay, so now the next one. What did happen were the capital expenditures. We have to take those out. Now again, I caution you that oftentimes that is reported as a negative number, so you'll have to take its absolute value to subtract it. Don't just say plus and use their negative, because sometimes that can already be a positive number in if they took in more in financing than they did in spending from financing. But okay, so right here, statement of cash flows. There it is. Okay, here are the two different arguments. One says, just grab the property and equipment. That's the one you want, and use the absolute value of it. Another argument is no, because these, with Target, they're trivial. With some companies, these other numbers, money that they've made from other investments or things like that, those could actually be significant numbers. So there's another way of thinking about it. Use the net number down here at the bottom. I recommend you might as well do it that way. I think the book makes the problem simple enough you don't have to worry about that. But, I mean, just to be thorough, grab that number that is the sum of the investment activities, the ones that drained money, the ones that added money. Just take them all. Now for the last one. There's one more number here. Net operating, oops, I did it right off the bat, change. in net operating, that's a minus. Change in net operating working capital. Now this one is one, if you think too much about it, it will drive you crazy. If you just do the arithmetic, and preferably in Excel or on a calculator, and just put it in there, you won't have to think too much about it. Net operating working capital, NOWC, is going to be your current assets minus your current liabilities. If your current assets go up, like for example, I went from about $200 of accounts receivable to $500. That was actually a drain in cash because that was $300 more I don't have that I have to show that I did have. If I make a sale of $2,000 and I get cash of $800 and $1,200 is on receivables, then my $2,000 is not $2,000. It is $1,200 less than $2,000. So when current assets go up, the result is that net operating working capital increases. If, on the other hand, I put off paying bills, if current liabilities go up, that will cause net operating working capital to decrease. Now, the change in net operating working capital is just net operating working capital for the current period minus the net operating working capital for the previous period. That's all it is. So I'm going to do a sidebar calculation here. This is how you should do it. Full disclosure, on the first exam, on midterm exam, I will take a real company and I'll give you its current assets and its current liabilities for a couple of years and say, what's the change? Just do that. It's one of my level three hard questions. But if you know what you're doing and you don't think about what you're doing too much, it's not hard at all. Watch. Ratios. Let me do it over here with the balance sheet. Okay. And I'm going to do NOWC. For 2022, let me move that, scooch that over a little bit. No. Let me do it over here. I'm going to save myself some aggravation. I'm going to just put it in the ratios over here where everything else is. Okay. So, net operating working capital for, I will need the current assets and the current liabilities. And then I will get the NOWC, and then I'll get the change. So all I do, the way I do this, and you can do it your own way, but the way I do it is I just say, all right, equals current assets. Then I go over to the balance sheet. I said I go over to the balance sheet. Where the heck is the balance sheet? There it is. Okay, the current assets were for this year were that. The current liabilities for the current year were equal to that, current liabilities. Come on, there they are. And then I take the current assets minus the current liabilities. And then I just copy that over, so I get the 2 years. Again, if you don't think about what you're doing, if you just do what I'm doing here, it's easy. If you start thinking about what makes what, and then I say the change is just the formula. Just follow the formula. Equals that, this year's NOWC minus that year's NOWC. And that was a negative $805 million. That says that our net operating working capital, we actually, Target actually saved $105 million. Its net operating working capital fell, which means that it isn't absorbing as much cash. Net operating working capital falling means that it is not absorbing as much cash. Now we're ready to finish this monstrous thing off here. NOPAT. We're going to take, by the formula, operating income. Where the heck is it? There. No, there it is. Okay. My gosh. Okay. Okay, that number right there. Now, at this point, I can do either times 1 minus 21%, or I can just subtract what they say they paid in income taxes, that money right there. The book usually, I think the book, your homework, just says take 1 minus 0.21, or 0.21 for the taxes. So I guess I will do it that way. I'll just say minus the taxes right there. Okay? Otherwise, I could have just taken the operating income times 1 minus 0.21 in parentheses. Okay, so now, minus the capital expenditures. Minus. Now, this is where I have to go over here, and that was where I gave you that warning about this is already a negative. So the way I do it, you don't want a minus a negative or you'll get a plus for cash flow. The way I usually do it is I just say minus absolute value of that number right there. That way you don't worry about whether it's a positive or a negative. You just subtract the absolute value of the number. And then the last thing is minus the change in net operating working capital, which is why I did that over there. What the hell do you mean? Oh. Oh, God, I wrote a long formula. Now I can't see why it's fussing at me. God, let's do it again. Equals operating. I hate that. Where's my income statement? Income statement. Operating income minus taxes. Plus, oh, I forgot the depreciation expense anyway, right there. Good thing I caught that. That would have been a little problem. Okay, then, minus your capital expenditures, which would be the absolute value of your capital expenditures in your statement of cash flow, right there. And then minus your net operating working capital. There we go. You have to do this a couple of times before you stop making stupid mistakes like I do. I do promise you one thing, though. On a midterm or an exam, I won't have you calculate a complete free cash flow. it's just so easy to make a mistake in it, like you're seeing me doing. But look at this. This is a darn healthy number. I mean, this is a really good thing. $7 billion in free cash flow. What did they do with that $7 billion? They paid their interest expense. They paid that nice big fat dividend. Hell, they might have even had a Christmas party for the employees. But you see that what at the end happens is that this is a real number. If it's positive, that is cash in they can use. If it's a negative number, that has to be found because that went to things. So when I found that Tesla was in the hole over $4 billion, that means they had to get that from somewhere. It's not just, oh, well, it's negative this year. They have to get it. And in Target's case, they are doing just dandy. That's why if you're talking about a buy signal, this is a message that this is a company that's a long hauler. It will be fine. And that's what we're trying to do here, is see at the end of the day if it's worth our investment dollars. Well, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.